Hey everyone, welcome to Stage Right. Today we have our good friend Scott O'Connor, amazing, amazing lighting designer. How you doing, my man?
I'm good, bro. How are you? It's good to see you.
You too, dude. Doing great now that the rain stopped down here in Miami.
Oh my God, I feel like we've been living in Europe, you know, like where it rains almost every day, you know?
For days.
God, it just hasn't stopped. Like my backyard and the plants and like all the, you know, since the whole lockdown, I've been really into, you know, gardening and like planting, you know, these fruits and some trees, and a lot of them just got, you know, drowned out. Yeah. So I'm happy that the rain has kind of let go a little bit, you know?
Yeah, man. I've been going to the park with my pup last couple of days and enjoying that sun.
Yeah. It's been nice. And then it goes away and then it starts boring.
Yeah. You know? All about balance. Dude, that's cool to hear you've been taking off gardening, man. I miss doing that out when I lived in California.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too crazy in terms of that I've been doing really good at it because I haven't. You know, I just, you know, some vegetables here and there, some peppers. And then, I planted this plantain tree, which has actually gotten huge, you know, like this orchid plantain tree. And it was like, it's like almost 10 feet now, and there's all these little pups coming up from it, and it's crazy, man.
Dude, I am all about the plantain life.
Yeah, I've been pretty stoked about it.
Those will thrive down here, for sure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they pretty much grow wild, you know? So we're pretty stoked about that. Although, full disclosure, I'm probably not going to be able to benefit from those fruits because my family and I were moving next month.
No way.
So, yeah, we decided to make a move to Alabama, Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, congrats on the move, man. I wish you guys the best.
Thank you. Yeah, we're pretty stoked about it. Nervous at the same time.
Of course.
Me personally, I'm from New York. I've been down here for like 17, 18 years now, and my wife is born and raised here, and she's pretty much, you know, really all she knows. So she's excited and nervous at the same time. So, and the kids are all jazzed about moving to a climate where you have a change of seasons, you know, and they're stoked to see snow and all that good stuff. So we're excited, man.
How old are your kids?
I have two. My daughter's 7 and my son is 4.
So why the move? What's the reasoning?
Me personally have been wanting to move for a long time. Not because I don't like it here or whatever, but I just needed a change of scenery, you know, and then, it's just so hot down here all the time, you know, like we're getting kind of tired of it. And then really the whole COVID thing kind of, you know, had a big part in that too. So really kind of slowing our lives down a little bit, change of pace and kind of getting out of the big city is probably some of the big reasons there. And, you know, and trying to extend, make our, you know, our money go a little bit further there. You know, the cost of living up there is a lot less. So, you know, there's a bunch of factors, but mainly, we just kind of slow things down a little bit, you know, I think is the biggest thing for us. So, and then why, you know, a lot of people have asked, well, why are you going to Alabama though? You know, what's in Alabama? So a very close colleague of mine, or a mentor of mine, I should say, has been living out there for a very long time. And you know, we went to visit him over the summer, him and his family. And, you know, we fell in love with the place, you know. The lifestyle out there is really nice. And actually, it's on the Tennessee River. So, you know, but the nature out there is just like, I don't know, man. It's just, you don't get that out here. And it's, you know what it's like down here. It's flat.
Oh, yeah.
So up there you have, you know, you're just south of Tennessee. So you're, you know, you're just south of like the Smoky Mountains. And, you know, there's just, I don't know, man, there's, the whole vibe out there is crazy.
It's a gorgeous area.
Yeah, and it has, as I'm sure you guys know, it has a big, and not many people know the music background that's up there.
Oh, my God.
You know? I mean, some of the greatest artists have recorded in this town and in these two studios, and it's like, You know, even they say it. It's like there's something magical about that place that they continue to keep going back and making records, I guess, making gold records. I don't know. But there is definitely a really cool vibe up there, man. So we're pretty excited.
That's awesome.
So I don't know if you guys ever watched, but they have that, there's a documentary on YouTube called Muscle Shoals, right? And the opening line is from, is Bono talking about this, small little town in Alabama that nobody's ever heard of. And it's like, the Stones have recorded there, Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin and like all these cats from the 60s. So yeah, man, we're excited. We're really excited,
Is that where you're going next, Los, for your move?
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't know. We'll see.
Come on up. We have to start a whole new thing up there, man.
So over here at Stage Right, I don't know if you know, but we ask everyone this that comes on the show: how do you prepare your morning bagel? Is there a favorite that you make? A go-to?
It's I've tried to give them this one because I've listened to a couple of the other previous episodes, and. And, my morning bagel, which at home, that's the last thing that I eat, which actually, I take that back. Once in a blue moon, the fam and I will go to El Bagel, which is up there in
Wynwood.
And my wife loves that place. So she goes, she orders from there all the time. But, and I'll get a lox, bagel and lox sandwich. And then they put, onions in there and I think cucumbers and they stack it, it's awesome. So one thing about me, which I don't know, we've never talked about this, but I'm not a cheese guy. So I don't do cheese. I don't do cream cheese. So I know that's a big debate amongst you two. So I do not do cream cheese. However, in looking, when we first went to El Bagel for the first time, I looked at, she said, what do you want to get? I looked at the menu and I'm like, well, I'm looking for the lox, bagel and lox, right? And sure enough, they have one and it's stacked and it's got everything in there. And the one thing it doesn't say that it has, which is cream cheese, right? But I guess it's a given. Everybody puts cream cheese on their bagel and lox, right? So I asked her, I said, are you sure? Do they put cream cheese on it? Double check. Because it doesn't say it, but I have a funny feeling it's just like it's there by default, it's going to have cream cheese. So she's like, no, it doesn't say it. So I'm not going to say don't put in no cream cheese, right? I'm like, all right, cool. So we get there, we pick it up, and we were going to the park to eat. And I open it up, and sure enough, it's just loaded with cream cheese, dude. loaded with cream cheese. And they were not stingy with the cream cheese, man. It was both sides caked on there. And yeah, so I was like, I can't wipe this off, So needless to say, I ate the sandwich, cream cheese and all, and it wasn't bad, I just... For some reason, I don't have an acquired taste for that type of topping per se, but it's the texture stuff. So cream cheese, I can't do it. Any cheese that smells, I can't touch it.
So you can't do a Gouda or anything?
No, Parmesan cheese, forget it. Like if there's Parmesan in the room, it's a problem.
I gotta go.
It's a problem. So it's not happening, But so back to how I like my bagel. Yeah, I like to put I like some lox on there. It depends on the type of mood and where you're at. Yep. You can't just be asking for salmon at any old bagel shop, So I will certainly analyze that. But some avocado on there is really good. Good old fashioned butter. When I was younger, I used to do, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy. I used to ask for back in New York and the bagels there. I don't know what it is, but I think it's pizza and bagels in New York.
Something
just
in the water.
Are amazing. I don't know what it is, but so I would ask for a plain bagel with bacon and butter.
Oof.
The guy would be like, are you sure? So you want bacon and you want butter on there. Okay, cool. Is that a little weird? But I can get that for you. And then I kind of slowed down as I got older. I was like, this can't
this
be
healthy. This cannot be good for my arteries.
Yeah. This can't be good for my, exactly. So now it's, I'll stick to some good pickled vegetables on there.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Something we haven't heard. Yeah.
Pickled onions, man. I tried growing okra, by the way. It didn't work out, but it started, I started getting these little things about that big, and then they just started dying off. Yeah. But good old plain bagel.
Yeah.
I think it's what you put on it that make it the it's what makes it make or break your bagel experience.
So being a lighting designer is a pretty specific career to end up in. How did you know that this is what you wanted to do?
It's kind of, when I look back on it, I see there's a couple of things have gone a little bit backwards, especially when I talk to other, my peers and other cats that are doing the same thing that I'm doing. When I was younger, I went to my first Fish concert. And, anybody who knows Fish and knows that whole experience, it's exactly that, they've got a crazy light show, and Chris Carota, who's this, who's their designer and who I've always looked up to for the longest time, just blew my mind. And I was, I was at one of those shows where I was just like, this is awesome, and I have to, this is totally what I want to do for the rest of my life, and of course, I don't know what kind of psychedelic drugs I was on at that time, but it stuck with me. I was always into it, and I knew that I wanted to pursue a career, in that realm. And I got the opportunity to meet Chris through some other mutual friends. So we talked, and he kind of guided me on a certain path, and then I started researching all the companies of, who makes all these lights and equipment. And I stumbled upon this company called Martin, who is actually now owned by Harman, which is owned by Samsung. And, it wasn't so corporate back then, but, so I was always on their website and checking things out, and I saw a job posting, and I was just like, I'm gonna go for this. Let's see what it is. I had zero experience. I mean, we used to, my brother, I had moved down from New York here to Miami and my brother was already here, and I moved in with my brother, and he was involved in, he's a musician and he was in bands and doing all this stuff. So I used to, I figured, let me get started doing that, doing lights for small bands and clubs. And so my brother started this band called Suenalo, which is this Latin fusion band. I don't even know if they're still around, but he had started this band, and I was just like, cool, sweet, I'm gonna do lights for your band, and we would play at these small clubs, and I would just try to find whatever, if they had house lights, great, I would use those. Or we would get small park hands, and then we'd put this little park hand thing together. And I remember I used to have these little, let's say they're garage door openers, right? Which had a little clicker, and then the other side was a receiver that you would plug any light into. And it's just a basic on or off thing, right? Right. And then I had this whole table of these little garage door openers, right? And then I would just be tapping each one, and I knew exactly which one did what. And long story short, it turned into this big, huge table with garage door openers. And then I started realizing, look, man, if these guys make it anywhere, I'm going to have to up my game in terms of understanding intelligent lighting and how it works, because this garage door opening shit is not going to last too long, So it was fun while it lasted. And then I had soon realized, it was just like, look, you're going to have to up your game here and figure something out. So I started following all these companies, and Martin had a job posting for a field sales rep. And I was like, well, shit, that's gotta be the best way into the industry. I'll work for one of the top companies, So I submitted my resume, and, you know, I went in, I went on a job interview, and turns out I got the gig, you know, and I was a field, I became a field sales rep for Martin. And this was, I don't remember what it was, probably in like 2001, 2002. And it was like my first full-time gig, man, you know, corporate job. And they gave me a laptop, they gave me a cell phone, they gave me a credit card. I got an Amex card, you know? And I was just like, dude, this is awesome. You know, I got salary and all this stuff. And basically I had no choice, because at that time I was, you know, I just finished college, and my parents were like, hey, you know, you better find a, you're going to need to find a gig, because, you know, we're going to stop supporting you at this point. And so finally, so luckily it all worked out that way. And I got the gig, and, you know, fast forward, I was there for like 10 years, and I moved up the ranks from field sales to a sales manager. And then I got into product development, and I joined the product development team, and I became a product specialist. And then that's where the shift turned to, I became a product specialist for their controller lines and all their consoles. And I was basically the support guy that, you know, if there were issues with those consoles, you know, I was the tech support guy. So I was the one taking the calls in the middle of the night and you know, all during the day. And like some of these big programmers, you know, I started to build a relationship with these guys, you know, and designers too. You know, when I was a sales manager, that was who your clientele was, you know, like it was, right. It was your gig to promote the gear and get these guys to use the gear and you know,
you're their point of contact. Yeah.
Pretty much, you know, and like demo the gear. Hey, check out this new, you know, at that time the Mac 2000 came out, which was this hot, new hot light, and you know, hey, check this out, and blah blah blah. And so, you know, I started building these relationships, and all the whole time I was saying to myself, like, I want to be in this industry, and I want to be out there, you know, doing these shows and being the designer and being the programmer. I kind of just lost track of it almost, because I was, you know, I was so involved in the whole kind of the manufacturing side of things that I almost lost focus for a little bit of where I wanted to be. And finally, you know, I was dealing with programmers and, you know, 10 years have gone by, you know, which I don't regret, by the way, you know, it's some of the best years that I've ever had, you know? But I finally was like, look, if I don't leave now, I mean, it's going to be too late. I'll never be able to kind of go do the things that I've dreamed about, you know? So finally I made the move and left the company and went freelance. Actually, I didn't go freelance at that point. I was doing some side gigs and another company down here, a local production company, had said, hey, why don't you come work for us? You know, well, you know, we're doing gigs, we're doing shows and come work for us, and you know, and it'll be great. So that was when I was just like, look, I'm gonna make the move, you know, I'm gonna make the jump, get out of the corporate world, which, you know, I was doing really good there, and it was solid. It was a solid job, and you know, I had buried my roots down here. I got married, we had kids. Actually, I think I had left before my daughter was born, but you know, I got married, we bought a house, and you know, so to make the move was a big thing. I was actually really scared to make that shift. But yeah, I did it. And I started working with this company called Beach Sound.
Oh yeah.
And you, have you heard of Beach Sound?
Of course.
Yeah. They were bought out, and now it's 3G. But yeah, man, you know, Andre gave me a gig. He's the owner of Beach Sound, and he you know, gave me a gig, and that's kind of where things all started to shift from there, man. You know, I probably spent a couple years there, and then that's when I went freelance. And I kind of was just like, look, I want to, you know, do my own thing and try to get my own gigs. And sure enough, I did. It's, you know, but I'm very thankful for Beach Sound, because they introduced me to a lot of things. It opened up a lot of doors, you know. It's how I met Slightly Stupid, you know, and that whole realm had opened up its own doors, you know. But yeah, man, going from the corporate world, that's where I kind of rewinding a little bit. You know, I've met a lot of these programmers and designers who came up from the bottom, you know, and started young and started as a tech and then moved their way up to, you know, operating shows. And then, you know, before you know it, they were designing shows. And then some of these cats, whether they've been successful or not, have made a shift into another realm of like they go to a corporate gig, you know. It's yeah. like these guys have been freelance for so long. They're just like, I want to get out of the freelance world and look for that more stable gig, you know. And I did the exact opposite. You know, I had this corporate job and it was, you know, and I was really successful. And
but you still had your dream. That
yeah, man. And I still chase. Had that dream that I wanted to do and then kind of went for it. And it's like, once I have done that, I've been talked, you know, talked to some other cats and they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to take this gig with, you know, with Martin, or I'm taking this gig with Roby or whatever. And they're going to the manufacturing world, you know? So it was kind of did things backwards in that sense. But yeah, man, it's been an awesome road thus far, you know? And a lot of doors and opportunities have been opened and some shut, you know, certain things I've tried to get and didn't get, and, you know, but you always on to the next one, you know, and try to shoot for more, shoot for bigger, you know?
That's the attitude, man. That's what I say. If a door closes, you know, that means another one or more are opening at the same time. And it's part of the path.
I am a firm believer in everything happens for a reason, you know. And there was a reason that something gave me, you know, some sort of spark or kick in the butt to say, hey, you know, if you want to go do these things, if you want to go on tour and you want to, you know, design shows or program shows, you got to go now, you know? I mean, cause it's, and it was been rough, you know, like, I didn't start touring until, I think either 2013 or 14, and my daughter was already born. So like, you know, yeah, I kind of left, like, you know, a lot of these guys that I know touring into it have started young and have worked their way up and, you know,
they're already used to that lifestyle.
Right. They were used to that lifestyle. And then they've built relationships and built families, but it's always been on the premise of, hey, you know, this is the gig. This is what I do. You know, like, I did it the opposite, you know, like, you know, my wife's like, you're going to go on tour. What is that?
You're going to be gone for how long?
Yeah. And then my daughter's at that time, she was a baby at that time, but, you know, eventually she's just like, what's going on here? Where's my dad? You know, like, so man, it was some growing pains, but yeah, man, it's been a hell of a journey so far, man. And, I certainly have no regrets, you know?
That's beautiful, brother. Thank you so much for sharing your story, man. I love hearing this.
Thank you for asking.
Not everyone shares what their process and path has been, and I feel like they should, man. These stories connect us. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
We're all part of each other's stories, and that's super inspiring, man. It's admirable that you were set in a job, in a corporate world, salary, everything that you said, but still, like, that desire, that dream is so big that you can't escape it. You know what I mean? Like, and the worst thing is not knowing, not trying. Like,
well, that was the other thing too. Like, you know, so, and I was very fortunate in that job that I had to meet like some really big influential designers and some big guys. And I'm talking like, you know, some of a lot of the designers that I looked up to, you know, growing up, and I got the opportunity to meet these cats, you know, and I'm actually working, you know, with them in terms of showing them gear and like speccing product to them, you know what I mean? So, and like I'd be in a demo, you know, a demo room with, you know, with Roy Bennett, who's like one of the elite designers, you know, Madonna, Prince, and, you know, you name it, this guy has done it, you know? And I'm in there showing him a light and I'm like, I can't believe that I'm I'm in this room with this guy, and it's like, you know, it's in for in some regards, it's like you're, you know, you're meeting your favorite artist, you know,
totally.
You know, your favorite musician, you know, for the first time, and you're like, you know, you're starstruck, you know. For me, meeting these designers and working with these designers was the same thing. I'm like, I can't believe that I'm even talking to you right now. We're talking shop, you know, like, you know, and then we're going to go out to dinner and we're going to probably talk more shop and bullshit. And I'm just like, this is crazy, you know? No, man. And then at that point, and like, you're not even talking shop. Now you're talking about life. You're talking about, you know, what their favorite food is or what, you know, your favorite wine is or whatever. And it's like, I can't fucking believe that I'm doing this right now, you know? And I'm getting paid to do it on top of that. So yeah, man, it was like, it was crazy. And then in talking to some of these, I was able to build relationships with them. And then there'd be others that were like, you know, we became friends and, you know, I talked to some guys and say, hey, you know, it's a goal of mine to be in your shoes and to do something like you're doing. Could you give me any feedback? Is there any kind of like advice that you can give me? And most of the cats are pretty humble and they'll give you their advice and their experiences on how they made it. And then you meet some other ones that are not so, you know, they're a little jaded, you know, like, you know, they've had it rough coming up and they're jaded in the sense of like, if they had a different choice, they would have made a different choice and taken a different path. And they're like, oh, you don't want to do this, bro. You don't want to be, you know, on tour. You don't want to be living on a tour bus and living from hotel room to hotel room and blah, blah, blah. I mean, and like, you know, but I still have my goals, but I would listen to that, you know, and I would be like, okay, I mean, why is this guy bitching about it? You know, what is it really bad? You know, like, is there something that I'm not getting, you know? So I would actually really think about that and analyze that. And it wasn't just one cat, you know, I'm sure you guys know too. You've met your share of guys that are just like, they're super jaded and super negative, but they continue to do it because that's all that they know how to do, you know? So I wouldn't just brush that off. You know, I would take that feedback and really analyze that and then look at myself in that position and be like, well, maybe this guy's right. Maybe I don't want to fucking be on a tour bus. Maybe I don't, you know, want to be away from my family. Maybe I don't want to deal with this crazy management company and, you know, have to pitch these design ideas and then have guys critique your design ideas and tell you that they don't like it or you did a shitty show. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I really wanted the other side really bad, you know? And I was like, I have to experience it for myself. You know, I can't just listen to these guys.
Yeah. That's their perspective, which is valid. It's great to take it in and to meet those people. And I mean, absolutely hear both sides of the coin, man.
For sure. For sure.
I've definitely encountered that where you just meet some people that are just bitter and jaded and you kind of question like, why are you even doing this? But man, there's got to be something else. You know what I mean? Like you said, like you were doing something already that you've been doing for 10 or so years and people change, man. You can do anything you want.
It's true. You know, and look, there's so many different, you know, and there's somebody right behind you who's ready to take that gig, you know? And so, you know, you have to be humble and you have to love what you do, you know? And I mean, I certainly do. And sure, of course, there's going to be times where you're just like, fuck, man, I don't want to do this anymore. Or it's how you handle those situations, you know, and you get stressed out. And I think that's with anything, you know?
Yeah, that happens at any job and just going through life in general. Like, not everyone's going to have a chirpy, happy day, man. There is going to be days where there's a lot of problems that you need to solve. And you're right, man. It's how you keep your head on your shoulders facing those situations that makes you likable to work with and tour with.
Or just a human being in general, you know, a solid human being, you know?
Yeah, it's a basics for sure, man.
It's crazy how, you know, you could take those things and I'll tell you what, like this whole lockdown and pandemic and whatever you want to call it has really you know, put a lot of things into perspective, me personally, on how I act and respond and how I see certain things, you know, especially being home so much now with my family and how, you know, my kids are nuts, bro. They are like, you know, my son is a menace. My daughter, she's 7, and I almost think sometimes she's like 15 with some of the things that she says, you know? And they have tried my patience on so many different levels. I shouldn't say mine, our patience, my wife and myself, you know? So, and I've been home with them now in these past 6 or 8 months, then I've spent more time with them now than I have since they've been born. You know, my wife says, she's just like, this is nothing. You know, this is a normal day. You know, you're just experiencing it now on a regular basis, you know? And I'm like pulling my hair. I mean, I don't have any hair anymore, but I was like literally stressing out. Like, I don't know how to deal with this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like everyone's world got flipped upside down and
it really has. You know, and it's really tried my patience, and it's taught me how to deal with those things. You know, I know how to deal with pressure in a work environment, you know,
totally.
I know how to manage, you know, deal with managers and talk to artists but my own flesh and blood, you know, like was driving me insane. It's like, So that's been a big work in progress, you know, even on my personal relationship, you know, with a spouse, you know, with my wife, like, for the longest, I don't know how long I've been touring now, but it's been a good amount of time. And now she's almost to the point where she's like, do you have a tour that you're going to go on anytime soon? Or, you know, she almost wants me out of the house. And it's like, And I say that lightly, you know, she doesn't mean that, but we joke around about it.
When you love what we do, man, like touring just makes you more you, like, cause you're doing what you love. And when you're not, the little things just get to you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. So, you know, and dude, don't get me wrong. She, you know, is totally loving the time that we're all spending together, as am I, you know? But you know, it's interesting, you know, to like when you have two people that have, and we've been together for such a long time, it's like, you know, when you're not, and I think that's what thrives that relationship, where, you know, you're kind of separated, and then when you're together, it's like, you know, everything's awesome. But then now you're together 24/7, you know, and you're kind of like, you know, you're like, I gotta go for a walk or something, man. I gotta get out of here. But yeah, man, it's been a very interesting and a time where, you know, you're testing yourself.
Yeah, man, that's a good way to see it. Do some inner work,
some souls, yeah, internal soul searching in terms of, you know, and then how you're gonna manage your time now, because we're always on the road, and it's like, all right, well, you're not on the road now, you know. How are we going to do this?
Is there anything you've been meaning to do that you haven't done because you've been on the road? Yeah, things like that, man.
What have you? I mean, what have you guys been? How have you? I mean, obviously, you've started this podcast, which is, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
That's pretty awesome.
Thanks, man. I personally have been doing all the things that I couldn't do because I was touring most of the time, and which has been great, man. I paint. I don't know if you guys know this, but I paint a lot. And so I've been selling some commissions and just painting for myself and my friends. And
right on, man.
It's been cool to send people like some paintings, like randomly in the mail, you know, to lighten people's days up. And it's cool. I think it's like, hey, I have my friend's art in my house.
Yeah.
And, what I've been making some music and connecting with some people that way, and actually got my song into a commercial like a month ago.
Nice.
And dude, yeah, it's, you know, it's all about adapting, and you can sit and sulk. And I am sad, dude. I am sad that we're not touring, and
yeah,
I miss my friends. I miss mixing shows and traveling. But this is what it is right now. Some weird times, but you got to make... I mean, the clock's still running, baby. Like,
yeah, man. Man, you got to make the best of it, you know. And we're only on this planet for so long.
It's easy to lose sight of that sometimes. And like you said, man, me and my wife, like, we haven't spent this much time together since we got married. This has been like, oh wow, this is really like we're living with each other now, not just like. You know, I'm gone for 6 to 8 weeks and I'm home for 5 and then back out and, you know the spiel, but...
Yeah.
You know, I'd be out touring and then coming home was like, everything was wonderful. And like, you know, we didn't really have a lot of talks that we probably needed to have, which we have had this year. Yeah. And some of those harder conversations and...
Don't you just love those?
They're uncomfortable, man. But once you like power through that and have those talks, I feel like, you know, you get stronger. It's one of those things that makes you or breaks you. It definitely tests the relationship.
Yeah.
But I feel like we've grown a lot this year and gotten way closer. It's a couple.
Nice. Yeah, good.
Because like Los and I both have never seen our girlfriends or wives this much. In our entire relationships, you know?
Yeah, man. And, you know, it's not... What's that like? Like, in terms of... In your relationships, has it been... You know, have your wives or girlfriends... Have they been... Like, you got into the relationship like that, you know? Or has it been, you know, you met first... And then you started touring and it's like... You know, this huge shift.
The day, yeah. Like, I met my wife and, like, I was flying out to a gig... actually with you guys with Iration in Wyoming.
That's the day I broke up with my ex-girlfriend. Or sorry, she broke up with me, let's be clear.
Oh, wow. Damn, I did not know that. That's crazy. But yeah, ever since I've known her, I've been touring and freelancing. So she knows and she supports me. And I love that, man, that she supports my dreams and I support hers and we keep growing together. And she's always pushed me, too, to look outside of touring and do other things, too, with painting and music and whatever I want to figure out. She's always supporting me and finding new avenues to monetize and to be creative. And I love that, man. To have that support means the world to me.
Yeah, man. Hey, you know, when your better half can, I mean, I think that's part of the relationship is like they're there to support you and kind of, I mean, you know, I don't think that I would be in the position that I'm in if my wife hadn't put, you know, when I got that gig at Martin, you know, she pushed me to get that, to go to that, to submit my resume for that. She was like, hey, you know, that's the perfect, sounds like the perfect gig. Why don't you do it? And, you know, I got all self-conscious. Ah, that's like a big, huge company. There's no way that they're going to, like, I can't work there, you know? And she was, you know, she was my number one fan, man. And she's just like, dude, you need to, you know, email that company. You need to fill out that, you know, application and do the interview and go get the gig. Go get the gig, you know? It's like, how are you going to know if you never try? And what's the worst they're going to say? No, you know, like, and sure enough, like, I did the thing. I went on the job interview, and that at that time that we, you know, I was still in Miami, and their headquarters was in Sunrise, Florida. And on the way back from the interview, I'm driving, and I get this phone call, and the sales director is like, "Hey, man, just we really loved you, and we want to give you the gig." And I'm like, "Wow, okay, yeah, man, it was." It's just how that all happened was so crazy. And, you know, now that we're talking about it, like, yeah, you know, she pushed me to get that, to do it, you know? And like I said, if we hadn't met or if she didn't say that to me, like, I don't know what I'd be doing right now. You know? Yeah. You know, it's definitely been a fun experience, you know, especially this whole, you know, being home and you realize what you have, you know, like, hey, man, you're pretty good here. Hey, you know, like, I mean, my kids, even though they drive us insane, they're fucking super cute. And like, you know, they make us laugh. They make us mad. You know, we're always yelling, but you know, I'm definitely cherishing this time, you know, but excited to get back out there.
Have you done any gigs this year, drive-ins or live streams or?
No. Well, so, you know, I've been involved, like I'm involved a lot with Latin television here with Telemundo and Univision. So I do a lot of programming for a lot of these shows that they have. Basically, when I'm not on the road, I'm here, you know, working in these studios. So, and you know, I've been very lucky in the sense of like, you know, I guess with Latin television, you know, COVID who, like they don't, you know, they are still streamlining away. You know, sure, you know, when everything shut down in March, like we were in the middle of Lavos, which is, yeah, so it's Telemundo's version of The Voice. So yeah, man, that, you know, we were in the middle of that second season when the whole lockdown happened. So that got shut down. And then we went back to finish that season in July. You know, the studios opened back up. You know, we were under, you know, a whole new policy change. Like, we get tested every week. You know, you go in there, you got masks, and, you know, everybody's got to kind of keep separated and blah, blah, blah. There's no audience anymore, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, man, we went back to work in July and we wrapped that show up in August. And then, Premios Juventud, which is like an award show for Univision for like the young Latin artists, that happened at the Hard Rock. So, you know, I had to do all the outside pool performances there. And then Latin Billboards. I also draft, too. So
that's perfect for COVID, to be drafting at home.
Yeah, no, it's great. Well, I mean, obviously you need the, you know, you need the shows to draft for. But going back to Latin television, like, you know, they came back first. And, you know, I think that PJ show was like one of the first, you know, award shows, live award shows that came back in the industry, and it's work, you know, and I'm super stoked to have that opportunity to be able to do that, you know, especially when the live stuff's not even happening, and I think it's slowly starting to come back. Obviously, we're seeing the drive-in shows, and so it's a good. I'm excited for that to come back. I just wish it would be, you know, faster, if a little faster, you know.
Clapping your step, yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, but I get it, you know. I get, you know, it's a big problem out there. And look, I mean, hey, when they do these shows, you know, there's contestants that get sick and then they have to shut the whole thing down, you know, because they test every week. So if there's a positive, if somebody tests positive, you okay. know, they shut down and they have to, you know, either find a backup, reschedule. Yeah. So it's like, it's a huge nightmare, really, in terms of like logistics and you know, scheduling and whatnot. But yeah, they're figuring out ways to make it work again, you know? So it's a positive thing.
Yeah. The industry is definitely trying to adapt, man. No one wants to see more venues close and us fucking keep growing hungry, man. We want to go back to work.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm, you know, and I'm super stoked. I mean, I love the TV side of the gig, but I mean, I'm super passionate about a live show. Man, there is nothing, you know, more fulfilling than, you know, you get to a gig and you're gonna put a show on, you know, like.
I know, man. You're one of those people that I love watching mixing a show, because you can tell you're connected with what you're doing. You're moving with the music and you're feeling those chases and the button, like pushing the hits. You can tell.
It's all in the hits.
It's amazing, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I miss that, you know, because, and now in this realm, it's all time code, you know, and we're time coding everything, you know, and sure, there's a couple of things that we do on the fly, but mainly, everything is to track and everything is time coded and doing the live stuff, even though, you know, a lot of this live stuff that I'll do too is time coded, But, you know, but those hits and all that other stuff, you know, we do it live. And yeah, man. And the best part of like the band changing things up on you is like, hey, you know, we're going to do this tonight, you know, and you don't have anything in the can for that. And it's like, oh shit. But you make it work. And 9 out of 10 times, those are some of the best, you know, shows that of your tour, you know, or of the week or whatever, you know, like,
where things change up on you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, or the band doesn't even tell you and they just come out with a whole other song. You're like, oh shit, you know? And you're kind of just like, follow along and it's going to be great, you know? And at the end of the night, you're thinking, you're like, oh dude, look at your front of house guy and you're like, you're high fiving and you're like, dude, that was so sick.
Oh dude. What's your process usually for preparing a show, either like programming or designing?
We first would, you know, you talk with the band and, you know, and you kind of get where, you know, what their vibe is for that tour and what the concept, you know, is. And because at that moment, it's all about listening to what they're into, you know, and what they want to do and how they want to, you know, what kind of vibe they want to give out. And then you kind of take that feedback and kind of come up with a concept, you know, and in some cases, you know, the band will be, they're like, hey man, just fucking make it look sick, you know? And then you come up with your own concepts and pitch your own concepts. Or, you know, there's some bands or some artists that are like, hey, you know, we're really into this and we want to do something along these lines. And then you kind of take that type of ideas and structure and you run with that. And then you start, you know, pitching where your head's at, you know, and I take that and, you know, I show them, hey, kind of, these are some of the ideas I've been thinking about. And you build from there, you know? And of course, budget has to do, you know, budget drives it all, you know, like you could sit here and create some of the biggest and most elaborate things, but if they don't have, you know, they have a fraction of the amount that you thought they had, then you're going to need to start, you know, cutting here and cutting there, which happens all the time. But again, it's taking that or what you have to work with and really making something special out of that, you know? And I actually, that's the part of the gig that I enjoy, you know, like
working with what you have, what you're given. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and now, more than ever, it's going to be that way as we come back, you know, there's not going to, you know, the budgets that you were getting are probably not going to be the same, you know, and you're not going to be able to get the biggest, baddest lights that you used to get, you know. You're going to be more of like, hey, so what do you have on the shelf, you know, that I can take out for 6 weeks, you know? Which to me, I'm thinking like, I'm really stoked to do that. Like, okay, how do I take this old light and, you know, let's do something really cool or let's, you know, really think outside the box here for a second and a little bit of a challenge. Yeah. And do something unique and different without really going crazy with the bank, you know, and spending a lot of money there. So interesting to see how that kind of all unfolds but in terms of the process, yeah, we come up with a concept and, you know, we pitch it and it goes through its levels of approval and likes and dislikes and
reviews
and, you know, tweaks and modifications. And then we go to build it. How do we, you know, what venues we're playing at, you know, how many trucks? Hey, it's great to have this one thing, but if they only have one truck, and I got to share that truck with backline and audio and, you know, that big 160x40 set that you just designed is not going to fit in there. I'll see you bye. Yeah. You know, like, because all that other stuff has to happen first before, you know, all this shiny, flashy, you know, Italian twinkle lights, as somebody likes to tell me, you know, get cut. So yeah, man, it's a tough process, but I like it, you know, and I really enjoy it. And those are the challenges that make it, you know, make the gig really special.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a super cool relationship you get to build with the artist or band that you're working with. You know, you're co-creating something with them.
Yeah, man. You know,
super cool.
Well, it's to me, I see it as, you know, taking their vision, right, and making it or turning it into some sort of reality, right, so to speak, in terms of, you know, how do we do it for within this budget, and logistically, how do we make it happen, and then just ultimately putting an artist or a band in that environment on stage is very fulfilling, you know, and you're able to put them in their realm that helps them perform and really feel comfortable on stage is pretty special, man. You know, you get those goosebump moments, you know, and it's like, then you look at the crowd and the crowd is like, whoa, you know, like, and everybody in that crowd, although they're watching the same thing, all have their own different experiences, you know, and how they experience the same, what they're looking at is pretty awesome, man. You know, like, and sometimes, you know, I get the opportunity to talk to some people around and ask, hey, what did you think? You know, and they tell you, and you hear all the different stories about that one special moment, and every, you know, person that you get that feedback from has a different, you know, a different story to tell about it, you know? And it's like, wow, okay. And I didn't see it that way, but yeah, that's awesome, you know?
That's their perspective. Oh, yeah, dude, that's, man. So cool, man. Yeah.
You're making me tear up, man. I'm tearing up.
But, you know, look, that's the stuff that I miss, you know? And I think that goes for a lot of people, you know?
Those connections, man, yeah.
Yeah, and everybody 100%. In our industry, whether it be, you know, whether it be in lighting or audio or backline or, you know, whatever, they have those connections as well.
Yeah.
And you're
helping create these super memorable experiences for people, man, like night after night. And to me, that's one of the reasons I keep doing this. Like those goosebump moments, like you say, man, make it all worth it, man. All those long hours and travel days and whatever, like.
Yep. That's why, yeah, it's, you know, and you know, I have this conversation with, you know, people all the time, you know, with guys like yourself and even, you know, family members, and they're like, well, why do you, you know, do you love like riding in a bus and sleeping in a coffin and airport to airport? And I'm like, actually, I don't. That part's very tough, but it's the show, you know, it's like putting on the show that make what we do so great, you know, so special. And yeah, man, I hope that someday we can get back to what we were doing, you know? I'm afraid to say that it's gonna be very different, but hopefully it could be to a point where, you know, people can be sharing those experiences again, you know? And I'm sorry, man, but you know, the live stream stuff just isn't the same.
It's not even close.
You know, it's not even close. So hopefully it can get back to that point, you know, and we can be, you know, we can be seeing each other out there on the road, you know, and high fiving, you know, but
yeah. Do you have a favorite design or tour that you've done?
That one's a hard question. I love them all, you know, even the bad ones, because I see that as, okay,
growth opportunity.
Here's what not to do, you know, like,
I fucked it up.
Yeah. Here's what not to do. So, and I take that as, you know, as big, big, you know, experiences that go a long way to, you know, to help you on the next one. So
yeah, it comes along with taking risks and, like you said, getting out of your comfort zone. You might fuck it up, man, but you learn from that, like, big time, and makes you a better professional for sure.
So yeah, man, I so far I love them all. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's a great answer, baby. All right.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you have a preference in like indoor or outdoor venues?
I think I'll take an indoor venue.
Okay.
If I have the choice, but there's something about the outdoor ones too. It depends what outdoor venue, I guess you could say, is probably the best answer I could say. you know, but there's, you know, there's the Berkeley, which is an incredible, yeah. you know, incredible venue. I mean, Red Rocks, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Red Rocks, to be honest with you, but, you know, there's a story there where we don't have enough time to talk about it much, but it involved me in the hospital and then, not on anything related to Red Rocks, but I had gotten sick, leading up to the Red Rocks show. And anybody who knows, you know, the genre of music that we all work in, you know, you and Chris and myself, your Red Rocks gig is probably one of your biggest shows on the tour, you know? So, you know, I had ended up getting sick, you know, and I got off the bus that morning, and, you know, even Wiz had said to me, he's like, dude, you need to go to the urgent care, man. You know, you've been having like these chest pains for a while. Why don't you just go, you know, go get it checked out. You'll be fine. And you can come back, you know, I'm like, whatever. So I ended up going as soon as we got there, I ended up, yeah, I got off the bus. I woke up early, got off the bus and went to the urgent care. Anyways, long story short, it turned out I was sick and I had something with my heart and the urgent care said, hey, look, you know, there's a problem here. We don't necessarily know what it is, but we don't have the proper equipment to test it. And, so you have to go to, you know, send you to the hospital, right? So the hospital can check you out and then, you know, then you can, they'll let you go. So I'm like, all right, you know, cool. I guess I'll Uber to the hospital. They're like, no, you're not Ubering anywhere. Like, you're going to go in the ambulance. We're going to take you to the hospital. Yeah. So we do that. I go to the hospital and then, and now I'm being seen by like, you know, some of these doctors and nurses and, they get to the point where like, hey, so we're 90% certain, we know what you have, which turned out to be some sort of, I don't know, thing that like that it the muscles around your heart started to swell up and was like, you know, suffocating my heart, so to speak. And that was what was causing the chest pains. So they didn't want to let me go. Like they said, here, you know, we can just give you some, you know, we can give you medication for that. But unfortunately we can't, you know, in order to
release you.
In order to know that we're right, we have to keep you for a few days. And like, I'm like, oh, you know, for a few days, like
this is day of show.
Yeah, this is day of show, dude. So like they're loading in, you know, I'm getting this, you know, and Wiz is telling me what's going on. And so is the TM and and they're wondering what's happening with me. So, I'm like, I mean, I can't hang out here for two. And plus, you know, bus calls at like, you know, 1 a.m. I don't, you know, we're not staying here. Like I gotta go, you know? And they're like, well, look, you're not going anywhere really. And the only way that we can be sure, I felt fine at this point, you know, like, I'm like, dude, I'm fine. But they were taking tests and like the results that they were getting from the tests were like showing them that, you know, you're supposed to be having like textbook heart attack right now. So like, even they're looking at me like, why aren't you even, you know, why are you like, you look normal to us, you know? So they're scratching their heads and blah, blah, blah. So they're like, the only way we can confirm that you're okay is we have to see what's going on with your heart. So he's like, you know, the only way for us to do that is we could either start giving you stress tests, which take days, or I can stick a camera in your artery and look at your heart in real time right now. You know, it's like, it's a small little procedure, but we can look at your heart. We can check it out. And if everything's cool, we'll close you back up and, you know, you'll be here for a couple hours, but I can let you go and maybe you can make it to the show. Maybe that's what he says. And even if I didn't make the show, I would make bus call and I would be able to leave with the rest of, you know, the tour. Right. So I'm like, all right, shit, you know, I don't know what to do. Meanwhile, I'm calling my wife. I'm telling her what's going on. And like, you know, she's starting to freak out. She's like, do I need to go over there? And they're telling me like, no, it's just a small procedure. if by the time you get here, it's all going to be said and done. So it's not, you know, and they do it all the time, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, all right, fuck it. You know, let's see how this goes, you know, and let's do it. So I said, let's do it. And they're like, all right, cool. They get it all set up. I get my gown and they put me in a bed and they start wheeling me to the operating room. And I'm like, you know, operating room. Like I thought we were just going to do a small procedure. Like they're going to put a camera in the artery and they're going to check out my heart. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, it's kind of a little bit more involved, you know, like we are going to stick a camera in your artery. But you know, there's a possibility that I might have to go through another artery. And if something goes wrong there, it's a major artery that if you start bleeding from that, you know, things can get really bad very quick, you know? So I'm like, oh, fuck, dude.
Oh my God.
Like, I'm freaking out. At this point I was cool. And now I'm starting to freak out, you know, like I'm fuck the show. Like, I don't care about the show anymore. Now I'm like, what are these guys going to start doing to me? You know? So I lay down, I'm in the operating room and, you know, there's eight other doctors with me, you know, like there's nurses, practitioners, and like there's the surgeon, and they're all geared up, dude. You know, big lights there, and there's these big cameras and television screens, you know, like big monitors.
Monitors, yeah.
And so they're all like, hey, man, you know, take it easy. You're going to be fine. We do this all the time. And they gave me some meds, you know, they started loading me up with, well, I don't know what it was, but I was sedated, but I was still awake. Right.
Wow.
So, the anesthesiologist is in there and he's going to give me, you know, he starts pumping the drugs in there, you know? And at this point it comes right in and I'm, everything is fine now, you know, like I'm getting really high and I'm like, oh. And they start talking and these guys, they're all like, oh, so you're, you know, they all hear from, you know, we're, you know, I'm playing the show. It's like, you know, it's like stupid and we're doing Red Rocks and everybody knows Red Rocks out there. Right. So they're like, oh, you know, yeah, we love Red Rocks. And, you know, and so, you know, and they start playing music in the background and it's like, hey, do you want us to put on Slightly Stupid? I'm like, no, dude, don't. You can put anything else you want, but just like, I hear that on a regular basis. So you can go ahead and rock on with your bad self and what you want. So now the doctor's coming in and they cut me open and then they stick this camera in the artery, right? And it kind of felt like this bug crawled up my arm and went right in, you know? And I'm staring up at the thing and they're doing their thing. And the doctor tells me, he's like, hey, check it out, you know, and points me over to the monitor. And it's this 60-inch television with my heart and the arteries just like working in real time. And like, it's all like, you know, they've got this scope in there and I'm like, I'm looking at my heart and, you know, you see the arteries flapping and you see all the shit going on. And I'm like, oh, holy shit. You know, this is, I cannot believe this is happening. And so, yeah, finally he's just like, well, you know, this all looks pretty. It's all boring stuff. Looks all good. And, you know, they take the thing out. They close it up. They put this bracelet on me that, which I guess heals the incision they made in the artery. And then I can't move my arm at all because they tell you that too. Like, you cannot move your arm. If you move your arm, you could open that cut off. And if you start bleeding from there, you're going to be in a lot worse trouble than you were when you first got here. So they were like serious about it and whatever. And, you know, fast forward, I make it back to the venue 20 minutes before the band takes the stage. And we fucking rock a show.
Oh my God.
Dude, what a Red Rock story, man. Yeah. Wow.
It was super gnarly. But yeah, man, we came in there and I, you know, we rocked the show and I was like, I at the end of the night, I was just like, I can't believe all that happened, you know?
Didn't everyone play Scotty Made the Show that day and all sang it when you
came? Something like that, or yeah, the rendition of Scotty Doesn't Know.
Yeah, it was Scotty Made the Show.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, in terms of like my favorites, like the smallest venue, I have a there's a thing with like small, intimate venues that I'm just in love with. And I was on this tour one time. I don't know who it was with. I think it was like the Joy Formidable or something. And we played in San Francisco. We played the Great American Music Hall. I don't know you guys have ever been there.
Yep.
That place is, you know, probably off the top of my head is one of my favorites in terms of nostalgic and like history, you know. I'm a big Grateful Dead fan and they recorded like, I think like, I don't know if it was the first one from the vault or one of their vault records, they recorded in that venue when it was abandoned, you know. It was like an abandoned theater and they kind of went in there and took it over and kind of had, you know, hangouts there and big acid tests there and
squat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, super, so much history there. Just standing in that place alone, like you just get these weird chills, you know, up and down your spine. Like,
yeah, it's like doing a show at the Fillmore in San Fran. Mm-hmm. Those walls, those floors, they're just filled, man, with energy. That the history too. All those venues in LA, the Roxy, the Troubadour, there's something. I love going to those intimate shows, especially when you're with like a bigger band and you kind of got like have to figure it out to make things work into like that smaller setting. That challenge is fun. But then also those shows are they're always super memorable to me, man.
We probably have another hour of stories to do, so we could do part two of this.
So good to see you, man.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, bro. I can continue to keep talking. There's a lot more other stories there, man.
Heck, you know, man.
I don't know how they've happened, but you know, those have been and that's what makes, you know, really fun, you know, like the experiences that you have out there. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, you know. I think eventually we probably have to slow things down and be home more. But I'm totally down. I'm ready for round two.
Let's do it.
And whatever that brings, you know, like whatever those kind of experiences bring. But I need to be out there at least one more time, you know.
Yeah,
baby. That's what I'm saying, man. Well, dude, thank you so much for sharing your perspectives and your stories. I loved having you on here.
Yeah, likewise, guys. Thank you so much for having me on here. It's been awesome.
And dude, so good to see you, man. I really likewise. Hope we get to do some gigs together. And
yeah, man, for sure. We got to do one of those Mexico shows again, you know?
Oof. Yes.
The Closer
to the Sun
gigs, man. Those were fun.
That was such a good experience, man.
Yeah. That was a good time, man. We will do it again.
We will, brother.
Man, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Believe that.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, man.
All right, stage right. See you next week. Chris, you want to add anything?
Yeah.
No.
I'm good.
Nah.
Nah.
Later, guys. Thanks, man. Peace.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast.